Well, there's a lot of news. We've got chips inside people's brains, LGBTQ laws changing right before our eyes. A lot of things to talk about. So welcome to this week's, or really this month's, Around the Blackboard episode of Theology on Air. I'm Evan McClanahan. I'm the pastor at First Lutheran here in Houston. I'm joined by my co-producer, Sarah Stone, from Memorial Drive Presbyterian Church, and Patrick Hall, rector at Epiphany Episcopal here in Houston as well. So this is his first time joining us on Around the Blackboard. He's been with us before, so really great to have Patrick with us. I wore a sport coat just so I could try to hang with him in the dapper department.
That's nice. You got me beat. It's like a pin cord seersuckery thing.
So. Ah, is that what that's called?
That's the official name.
Pin it's cord, a brand name.
My target clothes are not pin cord entering into this conversation.
It's a brand name. Yeah. Well, I will say, as you like it when I remind you, I got it for a really good price. I got it at Goodwill, actually.
Anytime you ask Evan about anything, he'll tell you how you got it for free or at Goodwill.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean...
Gotta revel in those deals, man.
If the shoe fits, so. anyway, thanks for joining us. Let's dive in.
Yeah.
So, Patrick, you brought an interesting article to our attention where Elon Musk is changing the world for the better, I think. Maybe not.
Maybe not.
But give us a little background on this story.
Well, so anybody who knows Elon Musk knows that he is the king of aspirational entrepreneurial ventures. That are often hyped a little further than the reality actually lives. But given that several of those ventures have been successful, I mean, Tesla and and SpaceX were ventures that everybody thought were crazy. And then all of a sudden, they're wildly profitable, viable businesses. So I think because of that, you know, even though Elon Musk often talks a much bigger game than the actual science and work behind his companies would indicate is warranted, you know, people give his talk some credence.
Yeah.
So he's got a bunch of companies. He's got one that wants to put in underground tubes.
Tunneling, yeah.
Hyperlink. And so this is one of his companies. It's called Neuralink. And Neuralink is based on Elon Musk is a futurist, meaning that he is concerned about what he calls the singularity,
yep.
Meaning the coming emergence of some sort of artificial intelligence that that moots human life as we know it and could potentially be a threat to the human species. And so Neuralink is Musk's attempt to create a company, a biotech company, that will eventually dovetail human and artificial intelligence into one sort of merged entity, mm-hmm. so that rather than being left behind by the singularity, humans can ride the wave.
Hmm. Or war against them so they don't become our overlords.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
That didn't work out well in Terminator, but hopefully Skynet is not coming.
Yeah. Well, in Terminator, it's just humans fighting the machines. You know,
right.
They're not more highly evolved humans. I'm going to move that
right.
A little closer.
Yes.
Right there. So that's the problem, right? That was the problem.
Right. That's the question. So thus far, Neuralink has not been super impressive. They basically have cobbled together a number of scientific sort of brainwave reading things that neuroscientists have already discovered to allow, you know, pigs with this implant to play Pong, basically.
Well, and to help with some prosthetic.
Right. Yeah. I think that's. I'm not sure they're doing that now, but I think the idea is that Neuralink could eventually help with creating, you know, a more natural brain body interface with prosthetic limbs.
To be clear, I'm terrible at Pong, so if it would help me.
I don't think I've ever played Pong.
Oh. Yeah, it's like the first video game ever. You know, it's like the
yeah.
one, y'all know, you know what Pong is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just don't think I think I was like a generation too late for Pong.
I was as well, but I had like some retro Atari thing at one point in my household, so I played it for about 20 minutes, and it's pretty tough.
So Pong it was.
Yeah.
Well, it gets harder, right? In one of those games where the ball moves faster.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well, so maybe I'm just in awe of those pigs. Maybe what we've really discovered is that pigs are a lot smarter than we thought.
I've lost them, you guys.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that the church needs to talk about more is the way that technology is changing the fundamental propositions of human life. And we talk about that some around some issues that are very sensitive for people. You know, I mean, gene editing. And I mean, there's a lot of talk around stem cells. Like there's some investment in talking about that form of technology. But this kind of stuff, I think, is going to explode in the next 20 or 30 years. And some of it will be life-saving, right? I mean, people mm-hmm. who have, you know, brain illnesses, right?
Alzheimer's. Parkinson's, yeah.
Parkinson's and this chip or chips like it might be able to help with some of those illnesses. But it is inevitable that people will begin using the same technology yep. mm-hmm. to dramatically change and probably eventually enhance, you know, the processing power of the human mind. You know, I mean, basically embedding wiring the internet into people's heads. Mm-hmm. And if we just think about how traumatically destabilizing the internet has been when it's not in our heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, imagine what it will be like when it is.
Yeah. Well, there's so many sort of concerns that come to mind at the same time that you're excited about it. So I have somebody very close to me who suffers from epilepsy, and they're already doing something similar to this, but it's just not wireless, where they have sort of electrodes in the brain that will, you know, give an electrical impulse to combat the electrical impulse the brain is doing that makes a seizure. And so that's a game changer for people that are having seizures multiple times a day, and it's causing brain damage. And so in that way you think, yes, and I want them to find a cure for Alzheimer's and all of these things. And this idea that he's going to put this chip in the side of the skull with all these little fibers that are 20 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair, which is crazy. These filaments basically in your brain. That sounds amazing. And so then I'm like, yes, thumbs up. And then you think, but it's wireless. So who's controlling that? And who could hack into it? And who could do terrible things with it? I mean, humans are pretty terrible. I mean, so it just takes one bad hacker to really... Yeah, and then of course there are people that think it's like the mark of the beast, and I'm not there, but
I thought that was the vaccine.
Yeah, the vaccine and right. the Neuralink.
There's many marks of the beast these days. Yeah. It's hard to keep track of them.
It's like a choose your own adventure sitch.
Yeah, but it's actually, I mean, some people are concerned about the vaccine because it's a new kind of vaccine. It's not a new kind of technology
mRNA
per se.
Technology.
Yeah. And so gene editing is kind of the word. I don't know how true that is. And I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to speak to it. And I've talked to people who say never, ever take it no matter what. And I've talked to people who say yes, you know, who know about such things. And they say, yes, it's perfectly fine. But, you know, if it does change our body, we're already like on that path. And like we just got on that path in the last couple of months, like to the tune of hundreds of or billions of people. If the vaccine does that. But yeah, it's a question of, so when do you stop being, Patrick, answer the question. When do you stop being a human being? So we already agree that, say, prosthetics, obviously that doesn't change your human nature. Although I wonder if people ever debated something like that, you know? But what about prosthetics that are smart in some way? Or they have, what if they look more human-like? But anyway, so yeah, it's hard to know like what that line is.
And I think you're hitting on it. I mean, prosthetics, no one ever thought about prosthetics enhancing your human nature. Mm-hmm. For most of human life, prosthetics have been an attempt to mitigate some sort of diminution of your human nature.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Right. They're like the best case scenario if you lost a limb. No one ever thought about them as actually better than having a natural limb.
Yeah.
So I think what we're talking about is the degree to which our limits as embodied human beings define our nature. Mm. And if you begin to remove those limits, do you still have a human being? Mm. And for us as Christians, the question becomes, those limits to our human nature are part of how we understand our difference from God, right? Mm. God is eternal. We are not.
Yeah.
God has, you know, all of these capacities that make God an entirely different kind of being than we are.
Yeah.
But as we begin to eliminate those limits on embodied human life, what does that do to the gospel? Mm. And how do we talk about the gospel when we're talking to, you know, people who are by virtue of bioaugmentation, something like superheroes, right? What does that mean?
Right.
We're obviously nowhere near that right now. But I think these are the questions that are kind of being opened up by this kind of technology.
Yeah.
But you're also getting at like the motivation behind this. If the motivation behind this is what they call the near applications, right? Helping people with epilepsy, prosthetics, which we just watched an episode of Mindfield the other day where this is actually happening. Like I watched people using their brain to move their paralyzed arm, like crazy stuff. Mm. I guess it's not prosthetics, but quadriplegics and paraplegics. So if that's the motivation, then it's like you're talking about something that was there is not there and we're trying to fix it. It's a repair. But Elon Musk doesn't want to do that. Elon Musk wants to, well, one, he's assuming something that I think we would maybe not all presume, that the singularity is possible. So Theology on Tap, we did an event on transhumanism, and the guest speaker essentially said the singularity is never going to happen because of the depravity of humanity. Do you remember mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting, and also gave me great comfort that the robots won't overtake us one day. But if so, then your motivation changes everything too. Like, he thinks that's an actual possibility, and therefore we have to be ready to fight it and make ourselves sort of extra human, superhuman. That's one of the three S's, right? Super longevity, super intelligence, and super happiness. Because I find it fascinating.
Is your brain, you have a chip in your brain or something?
Well, I do have the first COVID shot in me, so,
Yeah. It's the mRNA.
But those three S's are all part of this chip, right? Yeah. Super happiness, if it could have a pharmacological effect. If you can help people that are depressed or anxious, like, yes to that. But then when does that stop? Does it become like a drug where we would tell people, oh, don't take heroin, that's bad.
Right.
Like, where does that line? Or just like a little bump of happiness. Yeah. Could you do that? I mean,
maybe the
so
Mormons
many implications.
Are right. Maybe
what?
The Mormons are right. You know, they don't allow you to drink caffeine, Okay,
let's not get crazy.
It's a
slippery slope.
Yeah.
It goes right from coffee to the Neuralink happiness bump.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah, I think I do think it's something to watch out for. I think maybe part of our preaching and teaching will need to be something like, maybe we don't know. Well, I have two thoughts. One is we don't know exactly when it is, but we'll know it when we see it, kind of like that Supreme Court justice said about pornography. It's like at some point we'll have a member or something who's looking at some technology that maybe we're not even familiar with, but the doctor's like pushing it on them. And then maybe that's the point we'll be like, no, now you've gone too far. You know,
right. Now we see where the line is.
Yeah. And so maybe that's the way we'll figure out what that line is. It might be too late by then.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I kind of feel like all the doomsday scenarios, like we kind of think, well, if this happens, then this will happen. And if this happens, then this will happen. But it probably won't go that way. Like, probably because when the first thing happens, like, our depravity will like find a way to screw it up so royally.
Right.
Or it'll have such a detrimental effect. I mean, for example, there are people predicting, and I have no idea if this is true, and I'm not trying to spread lies or anything like that, but there are people predicting that the vaccines, you know, could have a deleterious effect in a very big way in like the coming years, like it's changing our body in such a way. So it'll be like, well, we thought this new technology was going to be the great vaccine against et cetera, but actually it didn't go the way we thought. And so that technology is now shelved, you know? So
well, and to me, I mean, I think
I hope it's not true though.
I think part of the interesting thing about Neuralink in terms of our depravity is that not everyone is going to have access to this technology.
Oh, right.
That's so one of the things that worries me about this, about the way that our depravity will interact with these technologies, is that you literally will begin to see such a bifurcation.
Yep.
In
widening
human society
that
already exists.
Well, yeah.
But now it'll be so gargantuan that it'll even be as intimate as our own bodies. I mean, in some ways people say that it already is, right? I mean, there are a lot of poverty is majorly connected to deleterious health effects, right? I mean, everyone knows that. But this is like a whole nother level.
Yep.
When suddenly if you have the money, you can turn yourself into some kind of
cyborg. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then you have more control. And I mean, I don't think it's going to happen that way, because I think even if we got far enough where I'm trying to think of that, the Johnny Depp movie where he basically like interfaces himself with the internet.
Transcendence, I think.
Yes. Oh, it was like really good. But I don't think that'll happen. But even if it did, it only takes one person hacking it. It's like the drivable cars that are, or people hacking the systems
chaos
in cars.
Yeah.
And I think that'll put an end to it. But maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's move on to something even more controversial.
Because we solved that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is really a representative article in many respects of what's going on in many, many states around the country, which are basically, conservative states, red states, if you will. They see the 6-3 so-called conservative majority in the Supreme Court. I don't think that's what it is. It's maybe 5-4 the other way, if you ask me, given a lot of rulings lately. But anyway, they see that, and so they're advancing a number of bills, I think, sort of designed to test Roe. But also there's a reaction against transgenderism becoming so normalized so quickly. And so the idea of gender fluidity being accepted right off the bat has, of course, led to men competing in women's sporting events, claiming to be women, but
transgender women.
Yes, I never get that right. So
that's why I'm here, to help you.
Thank you. So let me just read a couple of paragraphs, maybe, this article. This is what Arkansas is up to these days, and it's from the Associated Press. Arkansas governor signs medical conscience objections law. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson on Friday signed into law legislation allowing doctors to refuse to treat someone because of religious or moral objections, a move opponents have said will give providers broad powers to turn away LGBTQ patients and others. The measure says healthcare workers and institutions have the right to not participate in non-emergency treatments that violate their conscience. Opponents of the law, including the Human Rights Campaign and the ACLU, have said it will allow doctors to refuse to offer a host of services for LGBTQ patients. The state chamber of commerce also opposed the measure, saying it sends the wrong message about the state. Well, I think that probably says something about the chamber of commerce. But I think this is going to be increasingly interesting because basically, let's just take the Colorado cake baker, who, by the way, was just sued again.
What money does he have left?
I don't know, you know. But anyway, but I think this is... These are defining issues of our time, much like civil rights was in the 60s and other issues were before, but even slavery for sure. Basically, the idea of do we view LGBT issues as tantamount to the civil rights issue, and will we respect a person's conscience as we didn't with civil rights? Will we respect a person's conscience if they don't see things the same way, if they don't see LGBT issues as you know, equal to those. So I'm imagining, for example, I'm trying to imagine a situation in which this would come up. You know, like let's say a psychiatrist refuses to treat somebody if they're transgender.
Well,
or
it gave
like
some
that.
Examples, and one of them was hormone continuing treatment, hormone treatment.
If it's right. In the hospital for something else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was reading this at first, I felt a little like bit of panic in me because I was thinking, well, what if I went to the hospital and the person that was treating me had some conscience objection to treating me for some reason. And of course, they talk about, no, the same sort of laws apply, that there can't be any like obvious discrimination or things like that. But then I thought, well, where is that line? Because the Hippocratic Oath, the first part is do no harm, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why like this doesn't affect emergency room stuff. But
well, the
a
first
pretty...
version of the bill did.
Oh, okay.
I mean, Hutchison says that he didn't sign. This is the second attempt that okay. the state legislature has made to pass a bill like this. The first one he didn't sign because he thought it was too broad. So this one actually has okay. limits the scope of care that
yeah.
can't be provided.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so what do y'all think? I mean, is this something that we need to be concerned about, that you know, conscience is conscience sort of under attack, or is this all, you know, a lot to do about nothing?
And like, who is conscience? That's right. I think what I was thinking when I was reading it. I realize I'm not the probable target audience for who should be offended by this, right? Like, I'm not a transgender woman or LGBT of any kind. But how far could this go? Like, if someone just doesn't want to treat me because I'm whatever, female.
Does that ever happen?
Not yet.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, I would be surprised if that does happen. Generally speaking, I think people in healthcare, they want to take care of everybody
they
heal. Can.
Yeah.
But I think that, I mean, let's just go back to something like, and this goes back to the Obamacare Act, you know, where Catholic charities are sort of having to provide insurance that provides for contraception. And so the Little Sisters of the Poor, you know, they take that to the Supreme Court. So this is, to me, a very similar issue, where basically if you don't feel like birth control, contraception, yeah. abortion services, you know, fostering, you know, kids into gay couple households and things like that, to me, all of that should be protected. I mean, no one who gets into the fields of a social work or pharmaceutical work or healthcare or psychiatry or psychology, I don't know why they wouldn't have the freedom. I mean, yeah, if their, you know, their arm fell off, you know, in a car wreck or something, okay, we'll do everything we can to save that life, et cetera. Nobody disagrees with that. But I think they should all be protected from being forced to do something against their will, because I don't believe that gay and lesbian persons, I don't think that is an equivalent reality to your state of being as being black is.
And that's the, I mean, it's good that you're making that tie, because what we're dealing with, I think there are two things that overlap here for me. One of them is that you're dealing with the imperfect way that the federal government tried to deal with segregation, using the very blunt tool of federal law to do that. And that's the legacy of our civil rights law, right? Mm-hmm. And so, Connor Fierstorf, who's a writer for The Atlantic, talks about what he calls concept creep. What he says is that what happens is that as discourse grows and changes, concepts that used to have very specific applications and meanings are then sort of stretched to meet new circumstances. Mm. And that's what we're dealing with here. The second thing to me is I think that it touches the question of what it means to exist in public. And to what degree your own private or your own personal would be a better word, your own personal convictions play out in the public realm. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's part of the distinction here. I think for many people who feel very strongly about the need for these protections, there is a strong sense of a yearning for a unity of person. In other words, I want to be able to be my religious self in public and in my actions as a public person in the same way that I am in my household or at my church. Whereas, you know, the sort of more in some ways classically enlightenment way that the United States has, or that Western countries have thought about the public square is, hey, you can believe whatever you want at home, but you do your job in public and you don't bother people.
But there's a difference between talking about your crazy stuff at the water cooler, you know, than say giving hormone treatment to a child to switch genders. If you think that really is going against the grain of how God created things to begin with, that's different. Then it's not just your personal views at that point. You get to this idea of like, what is true? What is right?
But it is your personal views about what is true. I mean, in the context of the public square, I mean, to you, that's not how it is. I mean, everybody
thinks what they believe is true.
Everybody's personal beliefs are true with a capital T. The problem is in our public square, no one gets to win that game.
Right.
Because if anyone does, you end up with something yucky. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the compromise of our public square.
Right. Which we enjoy those freedoms. But it's tricky for sure.
Yeah. But we do like we do have to have, like, if we actually are a society in any meaningful sense, like we have to have a standard of what we agree about, like humanity, like, and like very basic things about humanity, like, I don't know, God created them male and female, and sort of that's it, right? And so that was an agreed upon sort of understanding of humanity.
Wait. So that, are you saying that that's the one thing we have to agree upon?
No, I think we ought to agree on that. What I'm saying is that, so I don't believe in the idea that like I think that there are limits to what we can hold to as a society, if we're going to still remain a society, right? So like at some point, the idea that a very large group of people believe that gender is something people discover later in life, and then a whole group of other people who believe that gender is not that. Those are two fundamentally like different things that are never going to coexist. One of those views is going to have to win. Like they're going to have to win. I think the same is true ultimately in the long run on gay and lesbian issues. Although I think that transgenderism has, I think by leaps and bounds, sort of eclipsed those issues. I mean, we talk about LGBTQ. We really shouldn't, because I think they're all different issues. And
I actually agree with that.
You know, because I think that there are way more public ramifications for a different understanding of gender than for something like, lesbianism or homosexuality among men or something, which is more private, which is more personal, except with the question of fostering and adopting children. And yes, rewriting marriage laws, which is, I do think, is significant. But something like gender being disagreed upon, like something's like, I think one side in that debate is going to have to win. You know what I mean?
I don't think that's how it's going to work out. Yeah. I think, you know, because of what our, I think that to some degree, what we have determined is that the freedom that we all agree upon is freedom of choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, that might not be how the Constitution was written, but it certainly seems to be how our society functions now, right? And so I think increasingly, I don't think that I just don't think naturally that debate resolves itself.
Yeah,
End up with people on messily on both sides of the aisle and an endless cascade of litigation that never gets resolved in anyone's. I mean, this is what's happened with all these questions, yeah. Right? Abortion has ended that way. Mm-hmm. The gay and lesbian. I mean, you know, you might point to Obergefell, but there's still a ton of weird litigated mess in the midst of that question. Sure.
Yeah, that case did not. That was a very limited decision, actually.
Right.
You know,
and so what I'm saying is, I think this will end up in the same boat, yeah. Where you're just going to end up with like endless lawsuits that kind of renew themselves every time something like this happens, along with the salacious media coverage that then dies away when the next salacious piece of media coverage emerges.
Yeah.
I really don't think this resolves itself. And I think we continue having a society.
Yeah.
So because I think it doesn't resolve itself and we continue having a society, I don't think that you have to resolve it to have a society.
Yeah.
But don't you, whether you might not have everybody agreeing on one.
That was not my phone.
That was mine.
No.
It was junk call though, and it's not my fault.
Yeah. Not my fault. Yes. Sorry. I have two teenagers. So that's
my fault. It's my own most grievous fault.
Okay.
Well done. It's not Lent anymore, Evan.
Yes, he is risen.
He's risen indeed. Hallelujah. You trained me.
Yeah.
Okay. While that's true that we're never going to agree on some standard of truth or morality, I do think there are some, at least in our country or at least in sort of Western thought, some ideas that rise to the top that we all sort of agree on together that, you know, provide human flourishing. And I think that the Hippocratic Oath is a great example of one of those. Do no harm. I mean, you can talk to somebody that's a Wiccan, a Christian, a Muslim. I mean, does all kinds of religion, people that aren't religious, people that are atheists or agnostic. That seems to be something we kind of all agree on. Do no harm. And yet, what does that mean? Like in this situation, many of us would say that to give someone hormones to change them from one gender to another is harmful. And even non-Christians have written books about that kind of thing. Abigail Schreier just wrote a book about this idea with girls and the damage that that's doing to their bodies. And so is the do no harm, you know, give them what they're asking for because otherwise there'll be emotional harm. Mm-hmm. That gets really tricky. And in that way, I think I fall on the side of saying, yes, there should be a medical conscience objection. If I were a doctor, that's something that I would say, I can't do this. Having a teenage daughter myself, I can't imagine saying, yeah, we're gonna monkey with your hormones because you feel a certain way, which maybe that's a segue to the next article. But
let me give another example. This is more the back to the gay marriage question. But let's say, for example, so let's just say that gay marriage is the law of the land. I don't like that phrase because the Supreme Court doesn't write law. But anyway, let's just say that it's sort of the law of the land, and a couple like they're doing with this masterpiece Baker in Denver or wherever he is, they kind of target a church, knowing that they'll say no to a wedding, knowing also that there's probably 300 congregations like in Houston, for example, that would gladly host that service.
Yeah.
Likewise, there are certainly medical professionals who would do all of the things that somebody would object to do. Why then? What is really going on here? That's what I worry. Like that's what concerns me. It's like is what is really going on here? A lack of access, or is it something more sinister? Like I demand that you approve of me. Mm. I demand and. That is kind of my meta thought about the LGBT, some of these issues at large, to be brutally honest about it, which is that I believe that we're made in a certain way by God. I believe that there's a kind of a normalcy, you know, in terms of human sexuality and not. And I think that when people struggle with the abnormal, if you will, or not normal, if you will, and I mean that in the most technical sense possible, you know, understanding of sexuality, then it sometimes feels like I don't have peace in my soul about the way that I am, so I need everyone else. I demand that everyone else acknowledge that this is good and this is normal. And even in the church, we'll talk about it being holy now, you know.
Sacred.
And yeah. And you don't have to defend that, but, you know, but not looking at
to?
Me. But that's a concern, I guess, yeah. I've got.
Well,
you know?
I think to me that goes back to what we were just saying, which is that all of these are echoes of the successful gestures of the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
So the civil rights movement absolutely changes the way that populations who experience themselves as not represented in majoritarian culture related to majoritarian culture. Now there is suddenly a sense that you could, by incremental, constant pushing, achieve your aims, right? And that's ultimately what this is, right? I don't think it's so much about a personal, like, I want to be approved by you. Mm-hmm. It's about my community finds its meaning in fighting these fights, mm-hmm. small, incremental fights through not legislative action as much as legal action.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, if I'm going to be a good sort of a good representative member of my community, where am I going to go find this fight to fight?
Mm.
Because it's in the fighting of these fights that these communities develop their sense of identity.
Purpose.
Yeah. And their cohesion.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not about you as a conservative standing against them. It's about the role you play as being not a member of the community that creates a sense of solidarity amongst those who are in the community.
Yeah.
And to me, that's just the nature of this sort of political activity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. Hmm. Well, let's look at the next article then.
Yeah.
Which ties into a lot of
follows right along.
Yeah, it does. A friend of mine sent this to me last week about Jazz Jennings recalling being devastated by transgender soccer ban. So Jazz Jennings is a transgender female woman. I don't know how old she is now.
20, it says.
Okay.
20,
yeah. So transgender woman, meaning born what we might call a male and now female. And the thing about the article that got me was less about the, you know, should transgender women be in athletics, though I do find that a fascinating conversation. And I think I fall, as you might expect, conservatively on that. Again, I just keep thinking about my own teenage daughter. Like, she just doesn't stand a chance if she's on a soccer team with someone. But anyway, that notwithstanding, the thing that caught my eye, and the person that sent this to me, this was kind of the highlighted bit, was in the middle of the article, it says, at age 5, Jennings openly identified as a girl with the support of her parents who felt their daughter had gender dysphoria. Quote, the feeling of discomfort or distress that might occur in people whose gender identity differs from their sex assigned at birth. Or, I think I got my papers.
Sorry, it cut off a little bit.
That's okay.
Yep.
But this idea of age 5, and so it's just such an astonishing idea to me. I'm a mom of 2 kiddos that have believed some pretty crazy things about themselves as they were young. Still, I mean, I still don't trust them to make particularly important decisions. I mean, more now than before. And now they're old enough to actually have, you know, the hormones firing that say boys are cute or girls are cute or whatever. But to think that somebody at age 5 could classify themselves as something and the whole world will bend to that and move on that and actually change your physiology, to me, is frightening. It's not just frightening because, oh, what about when the law gets involved and makes parents do it? But just if gender is something that can be changed so young by someone that, I mean, they don't even know how to, like, you know, do all kinds of basic human things. It makes me wonder about, and I know that I'm going to get in hot water with this because gender and sexual orientation are different things. I think those 2 things are very linked together. And so it makes me wonder, if you're 5 and you're saying you think you're a different gender, could you also be 5 and say that you think you want something different sexually than what would be expected down the road? And if I'm going to do the thing that conservatives are always blamed of doing, which is I'm going to pedophilia, but just stick with me for a second. A lot of conservatives think the slippery slope of some of the LGBT stuff is that that's the next step, is that pedophilia will be celebrated and allowed.
If you remove barriers, you know, it gets harder and harder to remove other barriers, you know.
And I'm not getting into that discussion per se, but I am saying we have protections in place right now for young children so that they can't be the victim or the prey of somebody that has that kind of predatory leaning.
Even like Clinton Lewinsky was a power dynamic. Even, and there are two adults consenting.
I mean,
adults,
even the idea of statutory rape,
or
right?
Me too.
Yeah. So we put these protections in place, but then we also say, but you can be five and make this life-changing decision about your gender. I don't know when we start to take those protections away and let children make these. I mean, we would never say if a grown man wanted to engage in sexual relations with a young child, we would protect that. But why would we then not protect that child's gender and sexuality in this other way? I don't think I'm saying this quite right, but that's kind of my concern.
It's a consistency question, right? It's like, well, if you're old enough to determine your gender when you're five, and that deals in large part with, you know, your body and the sexual part of your body.
Yeah.
Then what really would be an appropriate age of something like consent? 18 is a long way from five. So I don't think anyone's saying that a five-year-old could give consent. Hopefully they'll never say that, but... I will say I read an article that about Michel Foucault, the French philosopher.
Oh, I read that too, about pederasty.
Yeah. And so he was like off in Tunisia or something. I think it was one of the French colonial countries in Africa. Yeah. And they were so desperate for his money, which he had in abundance, that he would have sex with children regularly, all the time, over and over for money, in cemeteries, no less, which was weird. I don't know what the significance of that was. Maybe it was just private. But that
article also, in some sense, answers. We read the same article, which I don't know if we did, but the article that I was reading about that issue talked about how a lot of the 1968 liberals in France, including Michel Foucault, were super libertines. France at that time, the age of consent. I don't even know if they had. I don't know what the laws were. France has always been. Ben has not had consent laws like Britain's British
but,
American.
But he wasn't the only person.
No, there,
it,
yeah, was,
it
there
was
a,
quite normal.
There was a whole movement among those 68 radicals to legitimize pederasty, which is sex between men and boys, mm-hmm. on the basis of their study of Greek culture.
Mm-hmm.
But the article was actually about how, even though Foucault has in some ways passed into the pantheon of kind of transcendent intellectuals in France, this issue has gone the other way.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, France has actually been pushing for stricter consent laws. And there is even a lot of conversation that people think it will happen soon that sex between a minor and an adult will soon be like stat rape. Will eventually emerge in French law.
Yeah.
So I think that for me, even as we're having these conversations about how you ought to be able to choose your gender, we are more, even outside of the church, there is so much more energy around consent and around policing.
That's true.
Consent and who can consent to what and what does that look like? There's an absolutely ferocious energy around that.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, what you're seeing is, I think, two paradoxical trends.
Yeah.
I think that the gender trend is the reason that is happening is because we are becoming really interested and almost reductively so in how you present yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That people should have the freedom to present themselves mm-hmm. in whichever way they wish to present themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that any sort of attempt to limit how you might be able to present yourself is, again, a limitation on your freedom to choose.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, we're also obsessed with the way that power dynamics limit people's freedom to choose.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we're in this really messy place, right, about how those two things interact.
See, I'm not so sure they're paradoxical. I think that you're exactly right that that's happening, but maybe it's happening as a response to the fact that we know it's just a matter of time until some of these rules are taken off the table and that's all we will have left is consent. Right? And
isn't one of the arguments that with the power dynamic that like even people who give consent can't really give consent. Okay, well, like going back to like Monica and Bill, right? It's like, could she really give consent in that way? She's with the most powerful man in the world, or Harvey Weinstein, who holds your career, your dreams, your aspirations, everything you've sacrificed for in his hand, in that hotel room, at that moment. Can you really give consent to that in any meaningful sense? So if we end up with only consent and not normative understandings of sex and relationships and everything else, that's not a good thing. That's a terrible thing. So,
well, my other response to what you were saying, Patrick, is you were talking about the way that people present themselves. There's this idea of being free to present yourself how you want. I think there's something really lovely and beautiful about that. But there's a difference between presenting yourself a certain way and discovering who you are. And maybe you try this on, you try that on. I mean, kids do this all the time, right? And changing your physiology, right?
Or everyone else agreeing with you.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, I think those two things.
So I actually don't think that people who are 8 years old should be going on hormone treatments. Mm. And to be fair, there's no sign that that actually happened with Jazz Jennings. All the article says is that her parents are like, okay, you're a girl.
Okay.
So there's literally nothing in here that indicates that she underwent any sort of physiological change at that young of an age.
Yeah.
I think if I were this parent, and I say this having no children, I would probably be like, let's sit on this.
Yeah.
Let's see how you feel when you're an adult and have the ability to make choices about your own body and mind.
Yeah.
And like whatever you decide at that point, like I will love you, whatever the choice is.
Yeah.
It sounds a little like that's the tack that Jazz Jennings' parents took at this young age. So I also I don't think 8 year olds should be making decisions about surgeries. Really any surgeries.
Well, yeah.
For themselves. Or about medical treatments, right?
Right.
I mean, I think that part of the role of parents is to make those determinations in the wisest and best way possible for their children while their children are unable to make them for themselves, right?
Yeah.
Makes me think of baptism,
right?
I mean, the reason we have sponsors at baptism is because you're not old enough to say these things for yourself. So your sponsors kind of step in and do that for you.
Argue with her one day about baptism. Get her, get her off my back.
Did she come after you?
Don't
about
out me on air. I'm Presbyterian.
Yeah, right. No, we totally agree about but some of her friends. They disagree.
Yes,
with
my
me,
friends,
so.
My friends.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I feel like I'm on that page there. This other thing, I mean, the question of how people perceive you. I think that the ultimate truth is that people perceive you in the way that you show them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just no way out of or around that. Like if you're Jazz Jennings, you start saying I'm a girl, for the most part, people are going to treat you that way. And that's just that to me is just part of the unwritten social contract of existence. Right. Which is like, however you show up, I'm not going to dig around in the hood of how you're showing
under
up.
Under the hood. Oh, dear.
Because we don't know, literally I'm just meeting you. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use the pronouns you want because we just met, I'm not going to argue with what.
Yeah.
So I think that's inevitable, but I do agree that that we probably shouldn't be putting 8 year olds on hormone treatments or having surgeries. I don't actually know that that's happening. Is that happening? I don't know if it is or not, but I don't think
about
that should happen
if
it is.
Definitely, there's lots of pre-puberty children right now taking puberty blockers.
What the whole Abigail Schreier book is about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the guys in Texas, the father who has twins and he's divorced and his wife has been wanting one of their sons to take puberty blocking drugs and he's fought it in courts and courts and he's lost. He's in Texas.
Yeah.
And so he now has to pay
he's lost because of the maternal preference.
Probably.
Right? And court and
law.
But also
say.
Just
in custody.
But the judge has sided with the mother and saying that yes, your son and there are anyway.
But this is the question. My guess is the judge sided with the mother because the judge said precedent says we always side
with the mother.
Yeah.
Not because of the zeitgeist
right.
of
because that's maybe. What judges do, right? That judge didn't want to litigate whether this kid could have these drugs, but he was going with the closest possible precedent.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting you said something about if someone says I'm a boy, you're just going to kind of roll with it because that's what we do. I think that's what we do in 2021. I don't think it's always what we've done. And in fact, we have someone that we want to come on the show later this summer who did that exact thing, said, I'm a boy. And thankfully, in her case, it is very thankful that some people said, but you're not. Like, why would you say that? What's that about? Got her into counseling and found out, and her story is very public, so I am not outing her on this, that she had endured some sexual trauma. And so had sort of done this thing in her mind. Well, if I'm a boy, no one can hurt me that way. So I have to be a boy. And then through a lot of good talk therapy and being loved by her community, finally said, no, I am a girl, but this happened to me. And that's something that I'm working through and thinking through. And so I don't think we always have done that. Like you present this way. So you're, I mean, if my kids come to me and say, I'm a boy, I'm gonna be like, okay, I mean, if you want to play with trucks and stuff, that's great. But you're not. God made you to be a girl. Praise be to God, because girls are amazing, or whatever.
Yeah.
Either child.
I mean, I feel like these issues, what we run into again is like the idiosyncratic messiness of human experience,
yeah.
right? Like, that's an incredible story. Like, if you have someone who was sexually abused mm-hmm. and began identifying as the opposite gender from who they were,
yeah.
because they were trauma, they it was an expression of their woundedness,
yeah.
and this conversation then led to an exploration of that woundedness,
yeah.
among the people who loved them the most. That's a great story.
Yeah.
And my point about that is just, I think one of the limitations to this is that it's impossible to build policy around these incredibly idiosyncratic experiences of human existence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think probably everybody has a different experience of their sexuality and of their gender, right? And those can be put into buckets, but at some point your life is a profoundly idiosyncratic experience.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But the color of someone's skin, we would agree that's not idiosyncratic. There's
actually, I think it is.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, what I mean is that in America, though, you know, for hundreds of years, there were laws built around the color of their skin.
Right.
So it may be that it's
horribly problematic ones.
Well, yeah. So I'm not.
We all agree about that.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, the reason I bring that up is because I think it's just a fatal flaw to equate any LGBT, anything on that whole spectrum, to the color of someone's skin. I don't think they're the same thing. I don't think they're the same category.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of taking the Civil Rights Act and applying it to that. To me, it doesn't make any sense. But that's because I think that for hundreds of years we had told black people that they were subhuman, that essentially the color of their skin was illegal. It was an illegal act to be that way. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that – I just don't think it's equivalent to LGBT. You know?
So there's the primary distinction is that the color of your skin is immediately verifiable, right?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, like – I mean, again, this is actually not always true, right? I mean, enter the mixed race people
sure.
who may be watching this podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're
like,
yeah. everyone always
it's
forgets
ambiguous.
About us, but
yeah.
we
yeah.
exist, right?
Yeah. yeah.
But in general, the color of your skin is a more physically verifiable trait than your sexuality,
right.
which like runs through this complete like vagifying mist of the combination of biology
mm-hmm.
and how you're raised.
But what if instead of comparing skin color and sexuality, you were to compare skin color and gender? Because, again, to be the cranky conservative, I think it's the same thing. I think it's identifiable. I mean, there's a very tiny amount of
yeah.
intersex people
right. yeah,
that I'm,
sure.
I'm not including here. But, I mean, we're not going to, quote, look under the hood because that's wrong. But when a baby is born, you know, just as clearly as you know if someone, you know, that's grown up their whole family in Nigeria versus one of us, that they look different. I don't know. I think that
yeah.
is a standard.
Right. Yeah. Which makes it actually different to me than the question of sexuality.
Yes.
Right. So that's my point is like our political
For
tendency
sure they, yeah.
is to like lump all of this stuff
right.
into one continuous discourse. And, you know, I say this as a Christian, I believe in distinction. Right.
Yeah.
Like in other words, our responses to each of these circumstances need to be rooted in looking carefully at what these circumstances are.
Yeah.
Rather than sort of like trying to sort of like be lazy and say, well, we'll treat this like we treat people who have different skin color, or we'll treat
yeah.
this like we treat people who are gay.
Yeah.
And that is why I would rather we take the LGBTQT like,
yeah.
and sort of like actually
parse them out.
Yeah.
And figure out, okay, what is the experience here? How does that differ from other experiences?
Mm-hmm.
And then how do we sort of respond to it hospitably based on its
yeah.
uniqueness?
Yeah.
Not to claim the last word, but we have one or two more things to look at before we run out of time. But I would say that I think that, you know, women, when you look at the transgender issue, I mean, look at Jazz being, you know, playing on a team as a biological male. I mean, in terms of his DNA, his bone density, his bone length, his muscle,
that
all of those
twitch,
sorts of
muscle
things.
Muscle fibers.
All
yeah.
of those sorts of things. You know, and he's playing, you know, with girls, et cetera, et cetera. There is a difference in all of that. And so who kind of suffers as a result? It's girls. So to me, there's kind of an irony in all of this.
But there's also a lot of diversity within each sex on those same issues.
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, there are girls who are like better soccer players.
I mean, for sure. Like
larger, stronger, faster soccer players than the other girls they play against.
Jennings.
And probably against some boys that they play against. So I agree with you, but I think what I hear you saying is what this does is it makes the physical characteristics of everyone on the field unequal. Yeah. And I'm like, if the physical characteristics were equal, then the sport wouldn't be fun. You'd have
That's
NASCAR.
True.
You'd have NASCAR where everyone's driving the same stupid car all the time.
Or just robots versus robots,
But I would say that, you know, this is something I read when I there was an article a while back about the whether men should actually enjoy watching women MMA fighters. And I actually kind of come on the side like, they shouldn't.
How did you
actually
find this
We've
article?
Lost Evan,
I don't
y'all.
Know. No.
What rabbit hole were you going down?
No, it's like Gospel Coalition or something. This was at the peak of Ronda Rousey's popularity.
Wait, so are men allowed to enjoy watching male MMA fighters but not female ones?
I don't actually think they should. I actually don't watch MMA at all.
MMA is gladiatorial combat.
Yeah,
I don't
I think there's something sort of like wrong, and it's maybe hard to put our finger on, about women fighting. I mean, not to say they all belong in the kitchen or something like that, but there's some there's something wrong about it. And so the author was making an argument that there's a kind of pornographic element to it, while it's not that directly. And maybe he was probing the depths of his own mind on that. But one of the points he made was that 99% of any man is stronger than any woman. In other words, there's the occasional Ronda Rousey that's like stronger than your average guy, but your average guy is stronger than 99% of women out there, you know. And so
let's arm wrestle right now on air. I'm kidding.
No way.
Right.
Some anecdotes.
We will do it later.
Right here and now.
We'll do it later, and if I win, we'll tell everyone about it. But,
oh my
but
gosh,
if
you
I
will
lose,
win.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would say about that, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I. There,
I like to think I'm fighting for women, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
you know,
it's very, very chivalrous of you.
Okay. Aww. Yeah.
I would say like I don't know. Like I find those sorts of statistics, unless I'm actually reading them in a study. I just don't know.
Fair
I think
enough.
There is a tremendous amount of bodily variation between both genders, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm skeptical of whether that's. That's a bold claim, my friend.
I'll have to find the
article.
You
realize that half of the public is male and half is female.
Yeah.
It's a bold claim.
Well, and 74% of all statistics are made up on the spot.
There you go.
You know,
which that statistic I agree with.
Yeah. Speaking of
what are we doing
birthing
next?
Babies, I've got humans are rapidly losing the ability to procreate.
I thought we were talking about Satan shoes next. So.
Well, we only have time probably for one more.
We should pick.
Oh my gosh!
We should pick.
Let's talk about the Satan shoes. You guys
okay
with that?
Yeah.
Although this whole
I think
thing
we'll
about
enjoy.
Let's
think,
just say quickly.
Bloody
let's just,
shoes.
Let's just read the headline so everyone knows we're going to talk about the fact that humans, because we're turning into plastic, are not going to be able to have babies by the year 2045.
You heard it here first. Children of Men. It was prophetic.
I do think
it's a good movie though.
It is a good movie. I do think that there is something. My argument about all of this sort of thing was going to be something around a contraceptive mentality. And I sometimes I wonder if we're putting something in the air that's telling our bodies to stop having children. But maybe it's just plastic. I don't know. Okay, so Lil Nas X.
It's all that takeout you've been eating.
Yeah. Lil Nas X, it's good to microwave your leftovers in the doggy bag, right?
Oh, my gosh.
You do that. Y'all do that too, right? I'm like, I'm not going to transfer this to a plate.
Nothing bad could ever happen.
Yeah, I'm like the
really?
Styrofoam.
You should
like,
wait until the doggy bag starts to smoke and makes that great
and
smell.
And like melt a little into the food.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's like, is it refried beans or is it styrofoam? It's kind of hard to tell, but I'm going to eat
tomato,
it.
Tomato, tomato.
Just adds flavor.
Okay, so y'all may have heard, because this is this is what Lil Nas X does. He, let's see. So let me just ask this. So Lil Nas X, can we talk pop culture for a minute?
Are we about to talk about Old Town Road?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, I didn't. I've never even heard it. I made myself listen.
What? I'm sorry. That was really loud.
No, I made myself listen.
I don't believe you.
Well, maybe I'd heard it, but I didn't know what it was. I don't listen to rap at all. Does that
this
make
is
me
not
a racist?
Rap.
By the way,
this literally got Billy Ray Cyrus in it.
That's what I'm. That's my question. That's all it takes to be country. To put that guy in the
video? It's on pop radio stations. It was on country radio stations. It was played at every club, like, all the time. I don't know how you got away from it. Just going to stores.
Is pop radio
driving around his MG singing Old Town Road, but he just doesn't know it. He's like, this song's really catchy. I think that's Billy Ray Cyrus.
Old Town Road. You haven't heard that?
Is pop radio on AM?
Oh, my gosh, Evan. Okay, so Evan's the one guy.
No, whatever. AM radio has made quite the comeback. Thank you, Rush Limbaugh. You've done us all a service. No, okay. And no, okay. So no, I maybe had heard that refrain, But how the story changes. Well, no. Like after I listened to it, I thought, oh, maybe I've heard that before. But okay. Anyway. Okay. So. Anyway, Billy Ray Cyrus, that's all it takes to be country. That was my question.
You're just underestimating the size of Billy Ray Cyrus's country cred.
Did Miley?
That guy could make anybody country. He could make me
He's
country.
Like the Dixie Chicks, like the gateway.
Did he have more than one song?
He had Achy Breaky Heart.
That's the one song. Did he have more than that?
Oh, man, he had a ton of hits. What was that song about the love letter and the jacket? I don't know.
Did he sing John Deere Green? Because that's the song I always think of. That's the song from my childhood.
But he also is the dad of Miley Cyrus.
Words by Heart. I know the words by heart. That was one of his
hits. But it doesn't sound like you do.
That's the name of the song? Okay. Are you saying you know the words? Okay.
I know. But so his daughter is Miley Cyrus, Hannah Montana. They did a show together. So he's famous for various reasons.
Throw down.
She twerks, I've heard.
Yeah.
Speaking of.
There you go.
It all comes full circle. Okay. So Lil Nas X, He had the big hit with Billy Ray Cyrus. Okay, he's in the stratosphere. And he seems to kind of delight then in, like, I don't know, like, just as an observer. You know, he likes to push boundaries. Like, so he's black, but he's homosexual. He raps, but he's, you know, those are sort of unique combinations.
Does these fusion things, speaking. Yeah.
So now he and Satan are best buddy. They put out this shoe with like blood in them.
Satan signed on it, yeah.
And so there's all these articles about it which are interesting. You've got conservative Christians saying like boycott everything. What do you boycott? You can't boycott Nike because Nike had nothing to do with it. But you boycott Nas X. You boycott blah blah blah.
I'm sure they made a huge portion of Old Town Road's listenership.
Yeah.
We're conservative Christians.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, well, yeah. So
it was catchy. It was relatively clean. Yeah.
I mean, every now and then, like, sometimes I wonder if, like, Christians should even care. Like, should we, like, what was the thing Disney did, like, years ago? Like, gay people, like, got in, like there was, like, a gay day or something. You know what I mean? Like, and people, you remember when people boycotted Disney?
No, like, I love Disney.
Southern Baptists were, like, saying, you can't go to Disney because, like, they have an LGBT Pride Day or something.
I kind of do remember this now. Yeah.
And so sometimes I wonder, like, should Christians even pay attention to this stuff? And by the way, I'm glad that Satan still has some, like...
Can still get people riled
up. Yeah.
Christendom still exists.
Yeah, exactly. but, like, one thing that did strike me as odd is that if you're trying to, like, push boundaries and, like kind of push homosexuality in a way kind of, like, more and more the mainstream, like, twerking for Satan is bad. That seems like a bad.
You
way
heard
to
it here first. Theology on Tear.
Can we make that the byline of the video?
I mean, isn't
twerking for Satan is bad?
I don't know.
Check out Theology on Tear.
Well, but I do think that there's obviously like this impulse to like shatter like any preconceptions at all, you know, and that's what he seems to be intent on doing with blood in his shoes and twerking with Satan and all of that. But of course, I'm just of the complete opposite mindset, like in every single way. You know, I think that there are like laws and rules, and Satan is bad, and you don't confuse categories. And,
well, my question when this whole thing blew up, whatever it was last week, and Christians were losing their mind, and of course the shoes sold out in like 4 nanoseconds or something crazy, is do we just sit back and say this is meant to rile us up, and so I'm just gonna not be the one that's like, oh, this is so wrong, or do we take a stand and say we serve a holy God who has put systems in place to honor him, make sacrifice, be close to him, all of these things. And this flies in the face of that. And so we should be coming out and say, this is wrong. This is wrong for all of these reasons. And I don't know. I don't know where I stand on that.
I'm firmly in the pick your battles.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to begin to recognize that we are increasingly our as Christians, minority in a culture that still plays with our toys but doesn't really view them as anything other than toys.
I mean,
Satan's a toy.
Yeah. Satan's a toy. Yeah.
Who's gonna make Lil Nas X a lot of money?
Yeah.
And whoever else putting drops of blood into the sneakers. So, I think we have to be
blood in there. You think that's a bunch of crap?
No.
You don't think so?
That's a lot of blood,
dude.
It's only one drop.
One drop for 1,000 shoes. That's like I give that like every 8 weeks at the blood donor.
I don't know, man.
Yeah,
I think it. Who knows? Maybe there's really blood in there. Anyway, my point is like there is a degree to which getting riled up is exactly what's selling these shoes.
Yes,
And so what you're actually doing by getting riled up is you are encouraging people to do more of this stuff.
To sell more stuff.
Yeah. And so you end up in this cycle where you're wasting all of your energy shaking your angry fist at Lil Nas X, who's like literally just riding on piles of cash.
Yeah.
That's made by you shaking your fist at him.
Well, I remember when the boycott happened, the quote boycott against Goya Foods. It was the reverse, right? Like the liberal, the left was upset. And so then they were going to boycott it. But then they ended up making a crap ton of money.
That's always how it works.
I mean, if it works that direction, it surely works the other direction.
Yeah, we have to, I think as Christians, in order to like reclaim our dignity, we have to unhook from the outrage cycle. Mm. Yeah. I mean, there are obviously things that we need to stand against in principled, charitable, eloquent, spiritually, you know, deep ways.
Winsome,
Lil Nas X, like, you know,
not quite
selling
worth
some
it.
Red sneakers. Like, it doesn't register.
Yeah.
To me, at least.
And also...
with you.
I think...
Sorry, he's Lutheran and he's Episcopal, so I just figured that was coming.
Well, I agree with everything you say. Like, I think going after this guy would be... It might make you feel better, but, like, it's kind of silly. But there is something about... I do wonder, though, if, like, there is a kind of rise in a kind of Satanism. You know, not the 1980s satanic panic and all that kind of stuff. But I do think that as... As the influence of Christianity wanes and as it wanes, it will like wane more and more quickly.
Yep.
Thing, you know. So I do think, but I do think people are made in the image of God. I think there will be an interest always in spiritual things.
Paganism.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so
I agree with that.
And that comes in many forms. So I do think that there is a, if we can say that, I don't know that people have Satans with Lucifer like on their altar at, you know, their house or something like that. Or what I say,
altars.
Shrines with, you know, something. But I do think that people will likely find themselves in future years studying paganism, which Paul directly says is our demon worship in 1 Corinthians. So I do think that there is going to be an increase in what I would say like authentic, true, satanic influence and worship even.
I actually agree with that. I mean, I think we are emerging into a new neo-pagan, pagan secularism.
We have a theology on tap in June about
But here's the thing. Whenever I think about this, I'm reminded of my New Testament professor at Virginia Seminary, whose name was John Ye, and he was from Taiwan. And he said that the reason why the church did so well there was because they did exorcisms. Mm. And there was a tradition of ancestor worship there. And what would happen is that people would get possessed through that ancestor worship, and then no one would be able to do anything about it. Hmm. You'd have like a possessed person chained to the bed, and no one could do anything about it.
It's like the pagan exorcist, barring the name of Jesus and X or something. Like,
yeah. But what made the church powerful was the church actually had an answer for that.
Wow.
I mean, in some ways, like, we have an answer for paganism.
That's right.
That's, again, to tie things all together then, maybe if I can pull this off. like, we talked about how, like, with the neuro thing, like, things may not go the way that we think. Like, we have this, like, grim view of the future, but actually, like, it'll probably kill itself off, you know, before it ever gets off the ground. And maybe that's kind of what neo-paganism will do. Like, the very faults within it will be seeds of its own destruction or something. So, like, we're worrying about it taking over, but actually, like, it'll hit some critical mass where it will be like, oh, it leads to satanic shoes, I'm out, you know?
Yeah, so sort of like paganism in the New Testament just like faded out. I'm being facetious.
Give it a couple of centuries.
I mean,
it's always going to come back in some form.
Yeah.
It's the New Age, and now it's neo-paganism, and I mean, it's going to find different life forms.
I don't think that it's going away. I mean, I think this is going to be the new normal, but what I am saying is that the church will have a new role to play in a world that is completely unfamiliar with its precepts. And it's going to look a lot more like the world the first apostles lived in.
Mm.
Okay, so basically between like stopping becoming a human and neo-paganism, I'm getting into automobile sales soon because I can't, I don't know, I don't have answers for all this stuff. So, okay, I'm Evan McClanahan, I'm the pastor at First Lutheran. Thanks for joining us today. Sarah Stone, people can find you at Memorial Drive Presbyterian Church.
Yeah, or just find me on Facebook, Sarah Stone.
Sarah Stone and Patrick Hall at Epiphany Episcopal Church. People can find you there.
Epiphany Episcopal Church, or you can find me on Facebook. I exist.
Aren't you a Twitter?
You know, not as much anymore. It's gotten creepy. I do have a Twitter name, which is at the Reverend at @THERevDMR at the Reverend Mister.
Okay.
Cool. Twitter's gotten creepy. I don't. It's everyone's mean on there now.
Aww.
I don't want to say anything that will get me canceled.
So. I understand. Yeah, no, none of us want that. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us on Theology on Air today. We do have a live Theology on Tap event if you're in Houston.
April 13th
at New Magnolia Brewing Company.
That's right,
7 o'clock on the Atonement. Dr. Paul Sloan will be talking about that. Whether, you know, God's a cosmic child abuser. That's the way we talk about the Atonement with Theology on Tap. And so check out the website, HoustonTOT.com. For all the information, find out who we are, all that kind of stuff. And until next time, we encourage you to think deeply.
Question freely.
Question freely.
Think deeply. Disagree as needed.